aboard, you people. It is the Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis on for another day broadcast insolence.
It is. Another day.
Another dollar.
All right. We do the show outside today?
Yeah, I was going to ask the same thing. Wouldn't that be great?
When your professor would take you out to the quad.
Right, yeah. And nobody would pay any attention to anything. Because you'd be like, hey, squirrel.
Right. Look at the birds.
Yeah, bird. Oh, there's a bird tweeting. And then you'd be looking at, and they know it, especially when you, like, in high school and college, you know, you'd go out there and then, you know, the pretty girls are all kind of,
Less clothing.
Right, and they're just kind of sitting there. And then there's some, like, some jogger that goes by, and you're like, hey, wait. You pay attention to everything else except for what they're talking
about.
That's
kind of how this time of year is in Chicago, isn't it? You know, normally you're just trying to get to where you need to go because it's cold out or the weather doesn't allow for you to, like, sort of meander and take it, like, you know, take in what's going on. And now it's like, oh, my gosh. It's so cool.
I think that the teachers who are the ones who just want to do that anyway because they're like, I'm stuck in this classroom and I'm not going to sit here deal with this anymore. And now with the gummy bears, you know, they don't have to, like, sneak and pretend that they're not smoking a joint. Because it's always the humanities guys that are taking out. It's always that English guy.
Philosophy.
Right. That's, like, it's, like, super cool. Mm-hmm. Right? Always has the prettiest junior and senior girls in his office to have a conversation with them about whatever, you know, really is critical in the world.
Looks like he was only in college a couple of years ago.
Right. He's got a big, gigantic poster of T.S. Eliot.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Anyway, that's that guy.
Well, I guess the answer is no. We can't take the show outside today.
All right. I suppose not. Hey, did we get the list? Kev, we were just talking about this. I know that we have many other things we're going to get to, but did we get the list of the 25 to 50 best bears today?
We did. 26 through 50.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I didn't hear it yet.
Anybody on there that we... Is there any recognizable name, or are they rolling all the people from the 1920s in there?
No, there is some older names. Doug Buffon coming in at 46.
Nice.
Okay.
Johnny Morris, 44.
All right.
I skipped over Otis Wilson, 45. Wilbur Marshall, 43. Neil Anderson, 41.
Interesting.
George Halas, which, again, this is players top 100.
Okay.
Who did play, but he was obviously more well-known for being the owner and a coach for so many years. He was 37. Red Grange, 36. He played for Halas.
Yeah, I knew Red Grange was going to work his way in there.
Yeah.
Because when any guy who ends up on the ticket at some point.
Yes. They're going to be on there.
Yeah.
Matt Forte, 34.
There you go.
Nice.
Let's see here. Peanut Tillman, 31.
All right.
Gary Fensick, 30. Lance Briggs, 28. Olin Krutz is 27. Ed Healy rounding out this.
I would think Olin Krutz would have been higher.
Yeah, but wait till you see the list tomorrow.
The offensive lineman. You know, in the history of offensive linemen in that organization, I mean, Olin Krutz is about as big a name as you can get.
It's not often you see people going out and getting offensive linemen jerseys. I mean, there's a handful of guys. You see a ton of Olin Krutz jerseys at Bears games.
Yeah, you do.
And around town.
So, you know what I thought was interesting? Khalil Mack made 60 yesterday, and he's only been on the team for a year. We were talking about that. He belongs on that list, and you can only see his number rising over the years.
Right, and he only played in, what, 13, right, games in the playoff game?
Yeah. Well, he missed two games.
Okay.
So, 14.
So, who's top 25? You got the McMahon we haven't mentioned yet.
No, McMahon's already been
McMahon's
in.
He was
McMahon
50.
Was over 50.
Oh.
Oh, you knew that was
53.
The Punky QB.
Yes, but, you know, and everybody goes, oh, he won the Super Bowl. Yeah, that's because he was in that game.
Right.
Right. You know, Steve Fuller was the one that won the big one in Dallas, you know, the 44-3 or whatever that was, 44-0.
I mean, we were talking about this the other day. The 85 Bears are going to make up majority of the top 25. I mean, Walter's going to be one, obviously.
Yes.
Buck is two.
Yeah, right.
And then Sarah's probably three. I'm guessing that's the top three.
Right.
But then you've got Hamp. You've got Richard Dent. You've got Singletary. I mean, who? McMichael's going to be on the list, right?
Again, you keep forgetting to mention Sid Luckman. He's going to be on the list.
Sid Luckman's going to be on the list, top 25.
Roe has very strong memories of Sid Luckman, meeting him.
Yeah, well.
His big schmooch he gave you.
I did.
On your lips.
Did you see Earl Bennett's tweet about all this, Kevin?
I saw him just kind of poke fun at it, like he didn't make the list or something like that.
Oh, yeah, he's not too happy, but people have been
brutal
about it. And so
was he really bitter about it? I thought he was just kind of poking fun at it, because I don't think Earl Bennett should be on the top.
The responses that he's been giving to other people and their comments on it, it seems like he's bitter.
Okay. Interesting.
Earl Bennett.
Oh.
Really? I thought he was poking fun, but I'll have to take a closer look, because Earl Bennett's doing his thing on Twitter lately. He does story time with Earl now, which is always interesting. He does. He goes hashtag story time with Earl, and he gives stories of his playing days. That's it's pretty fun.
He's one of those guys. Back in my day.
Back in my day. 7 years ago.
Oh, yeah. I see it here. Here I am tackling Julius Peppers. You're explaining, blocking Julius Peppers.
Yeah.
Yeah, taking him down.
Tackling Julius Peppers would be a hold.
Yeah, that's never going to happen. Yeah.
All right. Well, more on this a little bit later on in the program. Ben Bradley is standing by. He's got a big story for us coming up. But first, Kim, what's happening in the newsroom?
Ro, I'll bet you $20 the $20 bill won't be changing anytime soon.
Make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m. Then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events. See Chicago 10:30 p.m. on WGN-TV.
Hi, I'm Ben Bradley. Is in the WGN-TV newsroom where many things happen. And today is no different.
Except you, seems like you have an amazing story tonight, Ben. Just looking at the video you put out and the pictures, wow.
Yeah, it's wild. We've been hearing about hijinks in Harvey, it feels like, for decades. The former mayor, Eric Kellogg, served for 16 years. Thanks to some maneuvering by an alderman named Chris Clark, who passed a term limits bill, Kellogg was forced out of office, and Alderman Clark was actually elected. So he's the new mayor of Harvey. He got sworn in last week, and he told us he's shocked by what he found. He gave us a little tour of City Hall today, and it was stunning. You can find on my Twitter and Instagram pictures of just rooms stuffed with boxes from floor to ceiling, utility bills, insurance records, requests for death certificates exploding out of boxes. I mean, these boxes have been so crammed into closets.
And this is stuff that hasn't been addressed, or is this?
No, this is record keeping in the city of Harvey. And so, yes, yeah, some of it's years old, some of it's more recent.
Wow.
But the mayor
We're
told
writing the pictures
us,
on CLTV now. That's wild.
Yeah, the mayor told us that he inherited a city in such shambles and an HR department that has next to no quality paperwork on who works for the city and who doesn't. There are no employee IDs. There are no employee photos. That he's concerned that people are being paid who don't actually perform work for the city of Harvey. So Friday is the first payday since Mayor Clark took over, and he has suspended direct deposit, and he is requiring everybody to actually show up at City Hall with an ID. He wants to look him in the eye and say, okay, where do you work? Who do you work for? Where do you perform this work? And it's not certainly to take away from any people who are legitimately putting in work for the city of Harvey, but as numerous FBI investigations over the years have illustrated, there have been some significant issues of corruption in that south suburb. Specifically, as recently as March, two of Mayor Kellogg's brother and his cousin were actually charged in a bribery and extortion scheme. And in that federal criminal complaint, it actually mentions the mayor in an accusation that he required $3,000 to $6,000 in kickbacks.
The then mayor.
The former mayor, yes, Eric Kellogg, in kickbacks. Now, Mayor Kellogg has not been charged with wrongdoing, but as we all know, it's never good to be mentioned in a federal criminal complaint.
No.
As the feds work their way up.
Well, Harvey, there's a lot of suburbs. Well, a handful, I guess, a better way to put it. A handful of suburbs that are pretty contiguous around Harvey that have all kinds of issues, right? They're small municipalities. Mm-hmm. Some of them, for example, I think, is it Robbins? It's just been taken over by the county sheriffs.
Yeah, the Cook County Sheriff oversees one suburb down there. He actually oversaw Ford Heights for years. Dixmoor has had its share of problems. Yeah. Actually, Dixmoor's former mayor was named in the charges involving Harvey in March, Dixmoor's former mayor, now working as a consultant, apparently, or at least he was until he got criminally charged.
Yeah.
So the new mayor, Chris Clark, down there in Harvey, making the point of, you know, the first thing we need to do is, you know, figure out legitimate record keeping for our city. The money, payroll's the biggest expense in the city. And he said at this point, the HR department was in such shambles, he doesn't have confidence about the people who are on the payroll should actually be receiving paychecks or doing money to, or doing work to earn that money.
Gee, and just recently, I know they had to lay off police and firefighters because the city was in such financial mess. You know, that you've had this history of, it seems, you know, mismanagement in this town. and with real consequences.
They had to lay off 40 police officers and firefighters last year because of problems making pensions, because of budget issues. It is a, you know, it is, you know, like many suburbs, right? Like the city of Chicago, there's a real cash crunch there, and to, you know, to see how business appears to have been conducted over the years. Was really shocking today when we got that tour of
you know,
City
and the
Hall.
Funny thing about government, this is the one of the things that drives me nuts about this, is that in government, revenue is far more stable and predictable than it is in business.
True.
Right? You never know in business
good point.
What can happen. But you know in government, to a pretty good degree of certainty, how much is going to be coming in every year. And they still can't figure it out. They still can't figure it out. They can't figure out how, all right, this is how many we can do. Because if you just apply simple business practices to it, it can make at least better sense than this does. And nobody does that. Because in this environment, and this is not just the Chicago area or the, you know, these suburbs of the city or Cook County, although it all is all happening here in the same place. So let's not, you know, I don't want to sugarcoat it either.
No.
But, you know, and it does happen in other parts of the country, but it's so ridiculous because you get these little people that just want to get elected because they need the money, right?
Yeah, the former mayor Eric Kellogg down in Harvey was not only the mayor of the town, but for years he also installed himself as the local school superintendent with I believe it was a six-figure salary. We stopped by the former mayor's house today to see if he would comment on all
of
this.
How's he doing?
Well,
what do you have to say about it,
so
then?
So he didn't answer the door, but I did notice a Mercedes and a Jaguar registered in his name parked in the driveway.
Hmm.
Public service pays, apparently.
It was more of a... There was no working doorbell.
Did he look out the window and see you, or did you have any evidence of
that? No, I didn't see any curtains move in there. But there were his two cars were in the driveway.
So Mercedes and a Jaguar.
People in Harvey say they haven't seen much of him since he was term limited out of office. He did show up, though, at the swearing in of the new mayor.
Oh. Uh-oh. I don't know. I don't know what to take of that. I mean, because they're going, oh, well, is he gloating? Is he is the new guy his buddy? I mean, that's
no, the new guy is not his buddy.
All right.
Oh. Yeah, they're on polar opposites. You know, Chris Clark was able to get this term limits ordinance passed, and that's the only thing that dislodged Eric Kellogg from power.
All right.
And Kellogg had, you know, family members on the city payroll for years. You know, mm-hmm. it was certainly good to his family.
All right. Well, Ben, let me just say this to you.
Yes, sir.
When you hear that and you see Ben Bradley standing outside your door,
yeah.
Hit the ground and commando crawl behind the couch. And make
please
no
don't
noise.
Do that.
Don't do that.
It's much easier if you just talk to me, tell me your side of the story.
Right.
Right. Maybe there were a lot of paper cuts and that's why they couldn't file things. There's always an explanation.
Sure.
Even if you
You'd
invite,
like to hear
even
it.
if I invite Ben to my house, I'm still going to do that. Hit the ground.
You don't need to do that, because the time I went to your house, I was trapped outside of a large gate with spikes on it.
That's true.
Yeah. A large metal fence.
Well, but the funny thing about that was you weren't invited that day.
Right.
He doesn't have to be invited.
Right.
Ben
yeah.
just shows up.
Yeah.
Thank goodness there was a little old lady walking her poodle or her shih tzu or something and opened the gate, and I just went right in after her.
Is it that simple? All right. Thank you, Ben.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. Kim Gordon standing by with the WGN News. You'll hear that in 2 minutes.
We came here very seriously. We were interested. We are interested in doing infrastructure. It's clear the president isn't.
I told Senator Schumer, Speaker Pelosi, I want to do infrastructure. I want to do it more than you want to do it. But you know what? You can't do it under these circumstances. So get these phony investigations over with.
He is looking for every excuse. Hello, there were investigations going on 3 weeks ago when we met.
We believe that the President of the United States is engaged in a cover-up.
I don't do cover-ups. You people know that probably better than anybody.
In any event, I pray for the President of the United States, and I pray for the United States of America.
Okay.
What a time to be a Philip Bump right now.
Philip Bump of the Washington Post joins us right now on the Super Celebrity Hotline. And, Philip, this is...
What a time to be me.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a time. What a time to be in America. What a time to just be witnessing this, let alone reporting on it. I don't fully understand what I saw today. But I will say this. I do agree with the president. Very rarely have I said that, but I will say that here. He should not negotiate with the Democrats while the phony investigations are going on. But he should while the real ones are. And that's the thing that needs to be clarified, is that there are investigations that most of which we have been undertaken. They've been going on for a long time. Some of them are wrapping up. I know that the Senate Intel Committee is about to wrap up. But I don't know. You got these other things. People want answers. They want details. They want former officials to show up and tell them what they know in Congress. And the president says no.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think that you raise several valid points there, but I think the most significant is that the president and his supporters are trying to frame the Mueller report as being the end-all, be-all analysis of everything that's ever happened involving President Trump. And not only is that not true, even within the context of Russian interference and obstruction, which, there are certainly numerous questions that abound, and Robert Mueller himself in the document says, we weren't able to answer all these questions. He's pretty explicit about that. So even within that context, it's not true. But more broadly, when you're talking about President Trump's private business interests, when you're talking about money that may be coming in from foreign entities, when you're talking about the inauguration, when you're talking about the transition period, there are any number of questions outside of the scope of what Mueller was looking at anyway, which Democrats are now pressing on, and which in normal times it would seem would be pretty obviously fair game for them to go after.
What about the whole notion of impeachment? It seems Speaker Pelosi certainly has a growing, mounting pressure from the left wing of her party to proceed in that direction. And today, with her coming out with that carefully worded statement about he's engaged in a cover-up, it appears that, is she trying to create the case for the American people so that she has the support to move forward? What do you read here?
No, it's a great question. I mean, I think that she sort of was hoping that the impeachment furor would die out. I think that she is generally correct in assuming that the Democratic base broadly isn't super energized by the idea of impeachment. I think that polling has shown that, and I've actually just filed a piece that looks at generally interesting impeachment, which is lower, I think, than it is in the media itself and in D.C. I think she was hoping that would die out, but the problem is, because there was a lot of discussion of it in the media, because there are a lot of Democrats who are able to get on TV talking about impeachment, it keeps this bubbling, it keeps this out there as a subject of conversation, and it's getting harder for her to maintain her existing position. Whether or not she is actually trying to lay the groundwork at this point, I think is certainly debatable. I think it is the case, though, that she's trying to have a harder line linguistically, simply because people are seeing her as being overly and unfortunately timid. People on the left are seeing her that way, and I think she's trying to use rhetoric which matches the passion that she hears from them.
Well, she certainly does understand what the game is here, that the harder the left pushes on the impeachment button, the more coalesced the right will be. And there's a push-pull here, and that's a very, very important political dynamic as you head in 2020 in swing states. And that's where Nancy Pelosi sees this. She sees she's looking 18 months ahead.
Right.
And that's really, I think that's brilliant on her part, but the problem is people want what they want now. And impeachment, even if you started it, even if the House got together tomorrow and said, all right, that's it, we're voting on impeachment, we vote to impeachment, they impeached him tomorrow, it still wouldn't make it in time for you could see a situation where the trial itself in the Senate wouldn't happen until really late this year, early next year, and people would say, well, it's an election year, can't impeach a guy in an election year. So, and remember, in the Clinton case, that was very close, but he was leaving office, though. That was, he was already in the second term.
Yeah, and I also know that Speaker Pelosi talks about how we can walk and chew gum at the same time, but continue with investigations and starting an impeachment process, too. I just wonder if it gets harder to tell that message, not to your strongest supporters and base, but to those people in the middle of the road, that you're actually not just fighting with the president, but that you're fighting for us, and that you have a legislative agenda and you're doing things to help people,
right,
and not just fighting against our president. It starts that imagery starts to be clouded, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, I think that there are this is obviously a complicated subject, which is why we're having this conversation. And you both of you, I think, are generally true. I think there are some asterisks that apply, though. One is that it's not as though the Democrats are going to be able to do anything legislatively anyway, right? I mean, the Republicans in the Senate are not going to pass any new bills. Yes, if they came to some grand compromise on infrastructure, which was ostensibly the point of today's conversation, perhaps that's something that could be passed in both chambers and signed into law by the president. But that's sort of in the abstract. Everyone says they want to do things about infrastructure, but you know, as it turns out, as on many things, the two parties are pretty far apart in what they actually want to see from infrastructure. So it's not like the Democrats are sitting here poised to pass a bunch of laws, but are keep getting distracted by the investigations that are going on. They recognize that they're not going to be able to pass laws anyway. And that said, I don't think it is the case that these investigations use up all of their energy, right? So I think they can still do a lot of the sorts of things that they had been doing, talking about how they want to reform health care and so on and so forth.
Right.
So all of that said, I think the argument from the, I think you encapsulated well what Pelosi's argument is, which is, look, we've got this election looming. Let's just move forward toward that. You know, and I think there is some concern that by moving forward on impeachment, it mobilizes the Republicans in the way that, say, the Brett Kavanaugh hearings did at the end of last year as well.
Right.
Although, of course, that didn't affect 2018 too negatively for the Democrats. But I think that the counter argument to that is, yes, but if you have an impeachment hearing, it means that, A, potentially you are better able to shake loose information from the administration, because the courts may fast-track that, and, B, it means you're talking about various negative things about President Trump as he's facing re-election. And I think that's the trade-off that people are trying to negotiate.
Your ride is there, Philip. Just letting you know.
I know.
Just arriving now. All right. Before we leave this subject of Washington completely, which I would like to do, I'd like to leave it to. I don't even know who I want to leave it to. That's the damnedest part of this. I don't even. I have lost total trust and interest in all of these people, every single one of them. But do you think, as we move forward here, the president will, the courts will have to say no to the president here, and guys like Don McGahn and potentially Barr has to return, or Mueller has to go up to Capitol Hill and talk to Congress?
Yeah, I mean, I think that if most of these fights end up going through the legal process and being resolved, that the odds are good that Trump would probably lose a lot of these fights, if not most of them. That said, I don't really think, and experts with whom I've spoken don't really think, that that's what the fight is about. The fight is instead about eating up time. It's
right.
about getting things to go into court, going through multiple appeals processes and so on and so forth, because even given the 2020 election looming in November, it's also the case that these subpoenas and any contempt citations expire at the end of the Congress, which is the beginning of 2021, at which point this all potentially goes away anyhow.
Yeah. All right. Philip Bump, Washington Post. Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Phil.
All right. Let's talk with Kim now. What's coming up in the news at the top of the hour?
Chicago police announcing plans to beef up security for the long holiday weekend.
Coming up on the program, we've got Jim Corneliuson is going to be playing Newsaroos, and we know him,
right.
We love him, of course, from
yes.
the Blackhawks, and then other assorted games around the country he goes and he sings at, including a number of Bears games I've seen him at.
All-around great guy.
Very, 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 very impressive turn in his career when he replaced Jim Nabors at the Indianapolis 500. Because Jim Nabors, he would either show up and sing, or then they played recordings of him singing after he got too ill to do it, of back home in Indiana.
How cool is that?
And so Jim is now the singer of that. And it's you know, that's a tough song. You gotta sell that thing. It's operatic. I don't even know what the hell it's all about. And when do we have a state song here in Illinois?
I'm sure we do. I'm not sure. I don't know it, but let's look it up.
What rhymes with corruption?
Work that in.
Disruption.
Somehow. State song of Illinois. We do have one.
Taxes. Something is the word taxes.
Well, a lot of things rhyme with tax. That could tax.
You know, and also the rule.
Never heard that.
Asses, taxes. You know.
Someone said, "Let it snow."
Let it snow in May. Just trying to come up with it. I love that story earlier Was it last week where that, and they got national play. Fox News Channel, of course, started to push it. They thought it was kind of funny that there was a downstate lawmaker who wants to have Illinois secede from Chicago, make the city of Chicago the 51st state. And then maybe they didn't even like the idea of the suburbs of Chicago. So they wanted to do like suburbs of Chicago, 52nd state, which I, you know, again, these are even though the Fox News Channel push notification on their website was this is unlikely to actually occur, but there is growing interest in it. And you're like, who are they talking to? I invite all the crap kickers from Cairo and downstate, all the rest of the places downstate. Feel free, it'll be more than fine without you.
Wouldn't be a good move, I don't think.
Not for
anybody.
Not for them. Because they get a disproportionate amount of money back from us. They don't like to say that. They don't like to acknowledge that. But that is, in fact, the case. So, and the economics of Chicago, which is fine. And that's fine. You should go. But just realize this. You immediately move to 51st place behind Mississippi in terms of everything.
Funding for everything. Yeah, so they mention in the state song, which I've never heard, they do mention Lincoln, which is nice, Grant and Logan and our tears. It's a sad song that calls back to the Civil War and how the Southern host withdrew and pitting the gray against the blue. There were none more brave than you, Illinois, Illinois.
Oh, well, that was like all right.
So that's what it's about. They talk about the rivers flowing and the prairie, and then it talks more about Civil
War. I believe we found it. Is Jim Nabors singing this one, too?
We got it. That's interesting, because I don't think I've ever heard it.
Here's Denise Yates singing the
Illinois state song
of Illinois.
By thy rivers gently flowing, Illinois, Illinois, o'er thy prairies verdant growing, Illinois, Illinois, comes an echo on the breeze, rustling through the leafy trees, and its mellow tones are these, Illinois, Illinois.
Okay.
There you go.
I just realized what rhymes with Illinois. Annoy. So I'm good there. We gotta work the whole thing out. That's just the first of five verses, by the way. I'm sorry to cut that short.
Yeah, a lot of Illinois, Illinois.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of rhyming in it, actually. It's just most of the lines end with the Illinois, Illinois.
The kid that works it out.
You don't have to rhyme.
It's good when you don't rhyme. Yeah, you know, forget about the rhyming scheme. We got this worked out. And not exactly Lennon and McCartney writing this thing.
No. That's the state song.
Yeah, okay.
Now you've heard it.
All right, thanks. I wondered. Well, we answered a question. You see how quickly now in the era of the internet one can answer a question?
We're on it.
All right. The stories that matter are in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, and they're coming your way with Kim Gordon as your host to the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom in 2 little minutes. Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis on WGN, 720 AM, and then WGN everywhere. Anywhere you can find us on the web, the WGN app, we think is particularly great.
It is good. It's easy breezy.
For your phone or your tablet.
Download it, and then all you do is you just press play.
Yep, and we're there.
And we're right there
right.
for you.
We're either on the mainstream, sometimes we're on the other stream, but you can find us, you can find all kinds of stuff. It's crazy. There's a lot of content that gets delivered out of this station every day, not just what goes on the radio, but what goes on the web. And it's all good to average. I will say that. Oh, good to great to average.
Thank you. That's better.
Oh, man. All right. This week, we have been talking about the 40th anniversary of the crash of Flight 191, American Airlines 191, May 25th, 1979. DC-10, 270 passengers on board, and takes off from O'Hare on a Friday afternoon, early Friday. Yeah, it's like a 2 o'clock, 2:30, something like that in the afternoon. Rolling down the runway, 32 right, and an engine falls off as it's taking off. And that aircraft, we'll recall, that's one engine on either wing and then another one in the tail. This is a jumbo jet, twin aisle, big thing.
Yeah.
As it's climbing out, there had been some hydraulic cables that had been cut by the engine coming off and some other impact. Pilots lost control. And within 30 seconds of takeoff, it barreled down into a field just north and west of the city, or of O'Hare. And when it did that, it went in fully laden with fuel. Right. So it created not only an unrecoverable crash for all passengers and crew on board, but it also created a firestorm.
Yeah.
Which in this field, and which lasted for hours and hours and hours and hours. And Mac McCall is joining us. He is now the commissioner of the Glendale, Arizona Airport, but he was a shift operations supervisor at O'Hare on that day. And Mac, thank you very much for joining us. Really appreciate it. All right, so just take me through what the events of the afternoon were for you. So it's a normal day so far, right?
Well, good afternoon. Well, for me, I was scheduled to be the shift duty manager on the 4 to 12 shift, and the aircraft accident happened actually a little after 3 o'clock, and I had just pulled into our maintenance garage, and I was getting into the dispatch office, walking over to the dispatch office to check the motor pool to get a car. And since I was a little bit early, there was no cars for me yet, and that's when I heard over the radio that one of our field engineers that was out in the field doing some survey work called Mayday. Hmm. That's an unusual thing to hear over the construction radio. So I started listening, and I saw this big plume of smoke out the garage door northwest of the airport, and then our emergency notification system went off, and since there wasn't, my normal cars were not in yet because they were all on the field, I just took a car that used to be Vic Cass, who was the carpentry foreman, which had all the radios required in it. So I started taking off across the field to where the accident site was at, and I heard one of the things that I know is serious once I hear this, and the air traffic control ground controller said, all aircraft, hold your position, give way to all emergency vehicles. And once you hear that, you know there's a big problem.
Yeah.
So I checked in and began to go toward the accident site where I saw the smoke. And unfortunately, I made the mistake of coming up on the accident downwind rather than upwind. And it was just acrid, terrible, devastating smoke.
Yeah.
And as I tried to get to the side of it and got closer, I started looking for an airplane. And I couldn't find an airplane. I could see the fire and I could see the site, but I couldn't find an airplane. And as time went on and we got the flames under control, I realized that the airplane had literally melted. The only thing that we had there were, you know, seats and a couple of engines. There was an engine back on the runway on 32 right, and it was a horrific scene, and everything you can think of, you know, that would be on an airplane was in pieces somewhere, including the passengers.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it was a very devastating scene. And, you know, back in those days, there was no such thing as PTSD or any of that stuff. You know, for 10 years afterwards, you know, I would second guess everything I did, because this was an accident that didn't have to happen. This was a shortcut that was done by the maintenance supervisor of American Airlines there, and instead of taking the engine and the pylon off separately, he took it off in one piece
and then cracked the pylon when they put it back on.
Well, it had a, there's two main strut bolts, and then there's 38 bolts that hold those engines on, and it caused a crack in the one main bolt, and that caused the, after enough cycles, you know, as you know, as an airplane takes off, that's the most critical part on the airplane, and the most critical part on the pilot is the landing. So after enough cycles of that high pressure on the takeoff, it snapped, and that pulled all the other 38 bolts out and the hydraulics.
Yeah,
it had to be one.
Pretty much was.
Sorry, Matt. Go ahead.
Go.
I was just saying that had to be
pretty much.
I apologize.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just thinking of what you've seen and what you've been through, and when you just said that you've lived with it since, and you hear that from the people who've been interviewed, who witnessed this horrific accident, and the fact is that when all those emergency vehicles went to that scene, they hoped and prayed that they were going to be able to help save people, and the reality was there was no one to save. No one had a chance on board that plane.
Well, one of the things over the radio, we had one Chicago police field car that was almost the first on the scene, and he reported back, and when they said how bad, and he just said bad, 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 bad.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I told the story yesterday. My dad was on the scene the next day as part of recovery. Actually, that night, after the sun went down, and through that morning into the next day as part of the recovery efforts. Because as close as they could get, it took them about 4 hours to strike the fire, and it wasn't even strikeable in the beginning, mm-hmm. because you have so much jet fuel and so much other fuel for a fire like that. And I lived downtown at that time. I grew up downtown.
Yeah.
And you could see the tower of smoke over the buildings. You know, there was, because it was sort of a broken, cloudy, sunny day. I'll never forget that day, because it was, a late May afternoon, and that black tower of smoke was so defined because that fire had gotten so hot, and there was no, there was no sense that there would be a recovery. There was just this question, because someone had a picture, mm-hmm. of the plane as it was basically stalling in air, as it had gone vertical in terms of its wings, and there was a wing stall, and then thing just went right into the ground after that at a pretty good rate of speed, and then with all that jet fuel on board, it was just all over.
Yeah.
And there are so many changes, though, Mac. I know you're still in aviation. There were so many changes to the rules of airline rules, mechanics rules, that came directly out of this crash.
Well, the 70s, the late, mid and late 70s in general caused a lot of changes. As you know, in 1978, the airlines used to be regulated. They got a route. And as you know, once deregulation came in, any airline was able to fly anywhere, and it became a situation like for us old guys. The phone company in the old days, you had one number to call, they took care of everything. Now you've got all these competing phone companies. Well, you've got all these competing airlines now as well. But the thing that really sunk the DC-10 and got it out of passenger service was, you may remember some time later, that Flight 232 crashed in Sioux City, Iowa.
Right.
Which was from Denver en route to Chicago. And once again, I was the manager on duty. And this time I was at the gate area of the place at O'Hare, where the place was supposed to, the plane was supposed to come in.
Yeah.
And later that day, after I had been at the gate a while, and I'm trying to coordinate activities for passengers that are trying to find out what happened, they flew, United flew in about 100 survivors that decided to get on the plane, the next plane, and come to Chicago. And it was really an interesting situation, because I saw some wonderful reunions that day, but some terrible tragedies, that kind of stuff. As bad as it was at the 191 site, being at the gate, looking at the eyes of the mothers and the fathers and the sisters and the brothers, that was pretty difficult as well, I got to tell you. And the funny thing about that, well, not funny necessarily, but the interesting thing about that was, some of those survivors got off the plane and looked like they just got out of Vogue magazine. Their hair wasn't a problem, their suits were fine, and other people were all you know, ripped up and bandages and their clothes shredded. It was, it's just an airplane crash is just like the luck of the draw.
Right. That was a, it was that particular crash that happened in Sioux City. They had lost hydraulics again, and they had, the pilots had, it was United pilots, and they literally had a senior pilot on board who was deadheading, and he was able to join the crew in the cockpit and steer the aircraft using the left and right engines to steer left and right. It really got a very, very old school aviation. Yep. And so as they just approached the threshold of the runway in Sioux City for the emergency landing, they had an unfortunate shift in wind, and there was a bit of a down pressure wind on them, and that it hit hard and then popped up and started to roll. That aircraft rolled in a ball of fire down the runway in Sioux City, and when you saw that, you thought there's nobody who could ever possibly survive it. And an entire section of the sort of the beginning of the economy class literally got thrust out into a cornfield. And there were, I think, was it 12 or 15 seats that were still all connected to each other that landed in the cornfield. And those people, you know, heads up, those people just unbuckled themselves and walked out.
Oh, my word.
Yep.
I mean, it was the craziest thing you could possibly imagine. And when you see the video of that crash, because there were news crews there, because they knew this plane was coming in. Uh-huh. So there's a bunch of different video of this thing barreling and, you know, on fire down the runway. To your point, Mac, absolutely. You have no idea what the possibility is. And there were people in the front of the aircraft and the back of the aircraft that survived that thing. Now, again, mercifully, I think there were dozens who survived that. More died than lived. But it still was an amazing survival rate based on the horrific violence of that crash. Mac, thank you for your service. And thank you for your time with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mac.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you. Mac McCall, who is now a commissioner at Glendale, Arizona's airport, but was at O'Hare for many, many, many years and one of the first on the scene for 191 when it crashed 40 years ago on Saturday. Wow. All right, let's check in now with Kim. What's going on in the newsroom at the bottom of the hour?
New charges filed today against controversial attorney Michael Avenatti.
Traffic brought to you by Permaseal Basement Systems.
They're Chicago, they're real. Watch Dan Ponce and Lauren Jiggets, Larry Potash and Robin Baumgarten get real in the morning with the WGN-TV Morning News Team. It's all weekdays, 4 a.m. to 10 a.m. on WGN-TV.
Play a little game called Is It Legal with Mike Monaco coming up in a little bit.
I love that game.
Yeah. Actually, this is a celebrity edition, Is It Legal?
Oh.
Yeah. So it's not me asking the questions based on what I may or my friends may have done. This is going to be more of people that are in the news and what they did. Is it legal? Michael Avenatti, is it legal?
which part?
Donald Trump,
which
is it legal?
Which part?
We have a number of these things that we would like to ask. There are certain people we can't ask him about because he in the year 2019 has represented two of the most high profile cases in America. So we can't talk about those.
No, but we'll keep those out of it. There's enough material there with just the two mentioned peoples.
persons. That is pretty good. So that's coming your way. And we'll also go ask him his thoughts on the Bears top 75 players of all times because we can't get out of the way of that story either.
And should Rex Grossman have made the list? I think that's a no.
Well, Rex might make the list. He still hasn't done
top
25.
No, he won't.
Well, he went to the Super Bowl.
He's not going to be on the list.
Well, I mean, he's probably not going to be on the list because even Jim McMahon, they put him low on the list.
I know.
Because they're like, yeah, whatever. He went to the Super Bowl. But
put him on.
That was only because he was sober enough to get there that day. All right. Stay right there. Don't anybody move. We've got the news with Kim Gordon coming your way in two. Michael, I can't think of a piece of music that better fits Mike Monaco being here than the People's Court. Hey, okay, a couple important things. We can't. Hold on.
We need to be able to hear Mike in order for this segment to go well.
or maybe not.
I kind of think so.
Or not.
right, so let's...
How are you, Ro?
Mike,
hi,
I couldn't
Anna.
Be better.
You
thank
guys?
You, Michael. Right. Thank you for everything.
Oh, God.
I
this is not my favorite game. You know that.
Okay. So for years, Michael and I played a little game called Is It Legal? Yeah. Now, we played it off the air mostly because I would call him.
Yeah. Hello, Mike?
Right.
Is I have a question.
Yeah.
I've been drinking.
Uh-huh.
Mike and I have been... Yeah. We've been friends and companions, and not that way.
No,
for decades now, yeah. And you know, every once in a while, some things would happen, and sure. I would have to call Mike and go, yeah. "Mike, is yeah. this legal?" Because the arresting officer
how
says
how soon
it
can
is.
You get here? Yeah.
Did you ever, in advance of something, ask him if it's legal, yeah, or was well, it always after the
mostly,
fact?
Mostly, it's his the listeners. He had them call up and say, "Okay, I got a question.
Uh-huh.
I have a gun." No, God. Okay, let's hold off on that question. Just right. say no.
So here's the a couple things. Yeah. Couple things. Michael Avenatti.
Yeah,
Michael Avenatti has been accused of extortion.
Three right? separate things.
Charged.
Three separate charges.
Yes. And they all revolving around his representation of Stormy Daniels.
No, not all of them. One against Nike is about his representation of high school basketball players with Garagos, I think. And then... they got on the phone and said, unless Nike paid them $1 million or some large amount of money. And then he also wanted Nike to hire him to investigate the case.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so that was weird.
But the latest one, the allegations are that he forged Stormy Daniels' signature, stole her book proceeds, and then used money to pay for his Ferrari.
I know. This is exactly involving Stormy Daniels and her money. He stole her money. He was her lawyer, and now he's claiming that he gave her millions of dollars of free legal services. Well, if it's free legal services, then you can't charge her for them.
Right, well, okay, so Michael Monaco, is this legal?
Yes.
If you are not billing her,
yes,
because you've got her, you know, out there with you, and yeah. that's drawing all this attention, and yada, blah, blah, yada, do you... then have the right to give her a bill eventually.
Yeah, so sure, you could. You could right. give her a bill.
But he never gave her the bill before he took the $300,000.
Took the cash. Oh, God. Now, I'll tell you this. The case in New York against Nike is more has more problems for the government, it seems
nuanced.
To me. It is more nuanced because many cases, lawyers call opposing lawyers and say, if you don't do this, you're going to be sued. You're going to lose a lot of money. You're going to lose your job. You mm-hmm. this, that, and the other.
Right.
But here, it was really sort of a more direct threat, and it was a threat of accusing Nike of violating law. Now, that's one thing as a lawyer you cannot do. As a lawyer,
mm-hmm.
you cannot tell someone that you're going to cause them to have a criminal charge against them unless they pay you money. That is against the ethical rules of a lawyer. All over America.
Seems like it should be, too,
in
doesn't
New
it?
York and Chicago.
Does seem like the right thing.
Seems like LA. The right thing.
It's right. I like it. It said New York and Chicago.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Apparently, in that case, right ahead of their earnings call, he said that he needed to be paid $20 million or he would reveal embarrassing information about the company. That seems to fall under that umbrella of what you just described as
right.
not legal.
Right. But it's closer. It's closer.
It's close
That's
to legal, though. Because
How is that close?
Legal. Well, because if he has embarrassing information, he has a right to, as an attorney, he's got a right to disclose it. He can't.
And threaten them with it.
He can't quid pro quo it exactly, yeah. right?
It's a close question, but that's why they tape recorded all the calls, and he got arrested as he's about to go into the Boies Schiller offices in New York. The Boies Schiller is the law firm for Nike. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
that was a bad day for him.
Yes.
He says he had a call. There's a great story in Vanity Fair this week about Avenatti.
Where is Mark Garagos on this, though? Famed lawyer. We got to know him through the OJ
well,
trial.
Not only OJ, he was also sort of involved in Jussie Smollett, wasn't he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He oh, was. Right.
Yeah.
He was,
wait,
as
what
I
did
remember.
He replace? He replaced a guy. Hold on. Let me
where did we know him? Wait.
There was a Chicago lawyer who was involved
right.
in that case.
Very prominent.
Right.
A couple of us were
well-dressed gentlemen.
Yeah. I can't think of him. Oh, you know, it's the same guy that was sitting behind Michael Cohen.
Same guy.
In those hearings.
Yes.
That guy.
Now, I'll tell you about Michael Cohen's hearings. I'll tell you one thing about those hearings.
Okay.
The night before the hearings, Congressman Cummings called us up and said that he didn't want any lawyers sitting next to Michael Cohen.
Okay.
And we thought, what? That's the whole point.
That's the whole point of
being here. I can't sit next to him. And so I said, okay, because Cummings was in charge. He was in charge. Mm-hmm. He's the chairman. Yeah. He's in charge. So we said, okay, we sat behind him.
But isn't that the whole thing? Because didn't you, you know, totally want to do the Michael Hagan, where you
give him advice,
where you put your hand over the microphone,
right.
And then you lean in and say something into his ear, and then people on the television go,
Michael,
like in a golf voice, that is his attorney, Michael Monaco, now giving him advice.
You know, the Hagan thing is that a Godfather reference, Drew?
I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's not the reference I want to hear.
Yeah, come on. He's sitting right here.
That's from that scene.
You know. He can hear you.
I can hear you. I'd rather.
This committee owes disrespectful. My client an apology.
Yeah, exactly.
An apology. This committee is wrong. They owe my client an apology.
You're just like Roper. You've got those down. You got that well down.
Here's the issue.
I was thinking more like Brendan Sullivan represented... the former NRA head, who just left the NRA.
Wayne LaPierre?
No, not Wayne LaPierre. Ollie North. And he said, I'm not a potted plant. That was his line.
Yeah.
So you
didn't get next to sit next to him.
So
Mike, I guess we have to answer, was that legal? That was legal. That is correct. Exactly. That's legal Elijah Cummings. Okay, so now Donald Trump. Let's move along.
Okay.
Now that Avenatti is going away.
Yeah.
You think Avenatti will go away on this?
Well, there are three different charges.
Yeah.
And he may have three separate trials.
But the one, if he gets convicted on any or all of these,
he's going away.
Okay.
It's not a
probationary guy.
Offense. No.
Okay. All right. So Donald Trump.
I mean, theoretically, it's probationary, but it's not mandatory, but it's close to it. What about Donald Trump?
There's a number of them here right now.
Yeah.
Can Donald Trump say he refuses to negotiate with Democrats on any legislation until they stop their, as he's calling them, phony investigations? Now, if they say, okay, we'll stop the phony one. I know there's one over here. We'll do that one. But the ones about Russia, where Russians,
I don't understand why the president keeps saying that was a phony investigation when there was proof. They proved that Russia was involved in the campaign.
Because he'll say anything to make himself look better.
To help him. And he knew it. And his son knew it. And it's like, really? You still say that that's not a phony investigation?
Well, all right,
people went to jail.
So the question
I know one of them.
Can he stop? Yeah, you had a client that went to jail.
Yeah.
This entire committee owes my client an apology.
You know, that is very funny, Ro. Thank you very much, Michael. Stepping into your career here.
The point, thank you. I think that's well past.
Yeah, yeah.
But let's talk about whether or not you can the president, can he say, I'm not going to negotiate with you unless you drop an investigation against me?
That sounds like obstruction too, doesn't it?
It does sound like obstruction.
It sounds like obstruction.
Does it walk like obstruction?
I don't know. The fact that it's a congressional hearing may make it a little less like obstruction.
Okay.
Because he's certainly obstructing a congressional hearing.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's plenty of evidence in the Mueller report that says that the president did engage in obstruction of justice.
Why doesn't Mueller want to just run to Capitol Hill?
I would think so.
And get up there.
I would think he'd be so upset over what Barr did in misrepresenting the report as he did.
Because you read the report and you read the Mueller, you read the Mueller report and then you read the Barr letter, the 4-page letter, it is not accurate.
No,
the 4-page letter is not accurate.
It's completely false. It's just shocking.
But they're going with it. But that's the thing, because no one else is reading the report.
Right, exactly. Right.
And people just go along with it and go, well, they're totally exonerated.
Yeah, totally exonerated. But really?
So Bob Mueller thinks it would be viewed as too political if he came and testified. I guess I'm troubled a little bit about that, because if he sticks to the facts and maybe the American public would like to see that, like to hear from him personally.
Absolutely.
And I don't know how he would necessarily have to be political.
Yeah, they absolutely want to hear from him. They don't consider him political, I don't think. I don't think the public does.
I'll say this.
I'm still upset that Mueller did not subpoena the president to testify. I know it would take another year or so for the Supreme Court to finally get that issue, but that would have been an important issue, I think, for Mueller to follow up on, because as it is now, still the president makes these statements that are just so outrageous.
Well, also documents that have been subpoenaed, and the White House refuses to comply with them.
Yeah, that's another problem.
That legal?
No, not that is not legal.
That is not.
That is not.
No, put that one down on the list.
That is not
a long
legal.
List here.
Now, they did say today that I think the DOJ said that if the president issues an executive order claiming executive privilege, then possibly McMahon would not have to testify. But I think that's not true either, because McMahon was not...
McGahn
is not Trump's personal lawyer. McGahn was the lawyer for the president of the United States, not for Donald Trump. And as such, like we've had those cases in Illinois, because as you may well remember, several governors had lawyers,
yeah.
And several of those lawyers had to testify,
mm-hmm.
because they were not lawyers for the individual person. They were the lawyers for the governor and paid by the state,
right?
Just like McGahn is paid by the federal government. And so he would have to testify, I'm sure. There you go.
So you think he will, but so why is he not showing up? Why wouldn't he? I mean,
well,
you know, McGahn famously.
The president is ordering him not to. And I don't
but
understand.
But how does the president get to tell him to do that? He's a private citizen.
I don't know. I don't
the president cannot
know.
Tell a guy he can't show up if he's a private citizen. That seems like that's unconstitutional.
That
is that illegal?
Such that would seem like it's illegal, but
so far everything's
got
illegal.
A lot on the list.
Yeah, it's a long list.
Uh huh.
But that's an interesting question. If the president tells someone to do something, I mean, he's the president of the United States. He tells you not to testify. I would think it would be
because it's going to be bad for me. That seems like a crime too.
That's exactly right.
Doesn't it?
That's
okay.
Exactly. Right.
See that? All right, we got another one.
Yeah, of course,
I have another
it
one.
Would be a good defense. I didn't come here. Don't hold me in contempt. The president told me not to come.
But a president can't order a private citizen to do anything.
I suppose that's true, but...
Well, I think that's leads me to this question about the impeachment.
Does this involve Greece?
No, it does. I'd like to go to Greece, though, soon. It would be very nice.
This is not the point.
But no, but make me think of it now. Yeah. But if you move forward with impeachment... There's the political side of things, but there's also the legal side of it. And my understanding is that it opens up the ability for Congress to then get their hands
right.
on sensitive documents, tax
right.
returns, interviews with people who aren't cooperating that you can't currently do and get.
That is true. That under the law, according to previous case law, that where there is a impeachment investigation pending or ongoing, the courts have found that gives the Congress greater leeway in obtaining documents from the President of the United States. That's true. Now, we just saw a district court judge say that the president had to comply with certain of the congressional inquiries right now and did not require them to prove why they're asking for this information. So you might say, well, it's unnecessary to impeach the president in order to get all the information they want. On the other hand, I think you're exactly right, Anna, that it would be better for in terms of obtaining documents from the president and people around him if they were to begin an impeachment proceeding.
All right. Kim Jong-un, by the way, just called.
Everything he does is illegal.
Joe Biden.
I can answer that one.
thank you, Anna.
Just called Joe Biden an imbecile and low IQ.
God.
Who wrote that tweet for him?
He's learned at the foot of the master.
Right. He said, "Hey, hey, Kim, I love you. Listen, I just want to say one thing. If you'd like to tweet something, I've got a really good idea. It's about Joe Biden. Call him low IQ.
Oh God.
Also low energy.
What is happening?
That would be good.
It's amazing. The world is amazing.
I know. And that because Biden said that the Kim regime has tricked Donald Trump into going along with them.
All right, he's an imbecile. Go ahead, Kim. I love you.
Oh God,
what are you wearing right now, Kim?
Oh,
that mouse suit. I love the mouse suit. Very slimming.
All right.
Well, very nice to see you.
Thank you.
No other questions. Thank God thank God none of the of your listeners called in with questions. Thank God.
This was the celebrity version.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank God.
All right, let's check in with Kim Gordon. What's going on at the top of the hour?
The man known as the American Taliban set to be released from prison tomorrow.
Joe Kahn Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN Chicago. And a top five of five is coming your way.
Yeah.
Also in this hour. Other things.
Well, we got to talk about the Bears top 100 list.
Yep.
I'm still wondering if Rex Grossman makes the top 25. Going with no.
I like the way you did that. Like a woman at a coffee clutch. So does Rex Grossman make the top 25? And then slip. Mm-hmm. And it was almost like, so do you think Rex Grossman really is marriage material?
She became the Kermit the Frog meme where he's sipping tea. One?
Oh, yes. I love that. I love that meme. I've used that meme.
That's probably top 10
snarky
meme.
Comment.
He'll come in right after Mike Glennon and Kane McNown.
Gosh,
and
so
Henry
many.
Burris.
So many.
Kyle Orton. I don't think he's going to make the list.
Sean Payton is on that list, actually, of Chicago Bear quarterbacks. I think it's unlikely now.
People will be unsurprised with the top 25.
You know, he played in more games that year that the Bears made the Super Bowl in 2006 than McMahon.
What
played.
Are we doing here? Making a case for Rex Grossman to make this list? He's not going to make the list.
I mean,
we know that now.
Really, how would Rex Grossman be higher than Jim
right,
McMahon
stop,
or
stop,
Jay Cutler?
Stop! We'll do it on the other side. Don't get me started.
It seems like one of those issues is going to get everybody angry at each other.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You guys are the two people on the face of the earth debating on Rex Grossman making this list. Not a single person has even mentioned his name.
Stop. We're doing the thing.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Number five.
The only way to get out of that debate was to talk about Steve Mnuchin. He's the Treasury Secretary, and he had to break the news today that there will be no Harriet Tubman $20 bill.
Hmm.
At least during his tenure. I'm not going to let that happen. After a congresswoman, Ayanna Pressley, I loved her in Game of Thrones, said this.
Mr. Secretary, do you believe that representation matters in American politics and imagery?
Yes.
I'm so glad we agree. Mr. Secretary, yes or no, do you believe people other than white men have greatly contributed to this country and its history?
Yes.
Will the redesign meet the 2020 deadline, yes or no?
So let me comment that the primary reason we've looked at redesigning the currency is for counterfeiting issues.
Not because there's going to be a black lady on it. Essentially what he's saying.
So yes or no, will you meet what was originally the 2020 redesign deadline? Yes or no?
The imagery feature will not be an issue that comes up until most likely 2026.
Do you support Harriet Tubman being on the $20 bill?
I've made no decision as it relates to that.
So does that mean you have no intention of executing the redesign as planned by your predecessor?
Well, that is correct. I have not made a decision to execute on a redesign or haven't made a decision.
What about the representation?
Again, it's not a decision that is likely to come until way past my term, even if I serve the second term for the president. So I am not focused on that at the moment.
No tub on the dub. Harriet Tubman, sorry, babe. I know. You know, you had that Underground Railroad and crap. You know, you were doing things like, you know, helping slaves get away but I'm sorry. You just, you know, you don't rate a 20.
Pushing it off till 2026 is kind of like saying never, isn't it? I mean, does it just get taken up all of a sudden? And
it's promising that half the people in this administration will already be dead. Is what it's promising. It's like that seems like 7 years. Some of these guys are 80. I mean, who knows?
Oh boy!
So it's like let's just move along. That's what they want to do. And Mnuchin seems like just like such a warm and he's such a likable character. That guy.
Smarmy doesn't even come to mind when you think of him.
He looks like one of those guys that was a bad guy in an early Bond film, but an early bad guy, not the main bad guy, but an early bad guy that gets dispatched early. You know, like a henchman type. He is really, I don't understand.
Wasn't that. He proposing at the Treasury with his wife and the bills?
Yes, where they had the big sheet of money, and then she was holding it up like to show all of her friends on Instagram.
Taking the private jet places they maybe shouldn't have.
Our private jet, not theirs.
Our private jet.
They should take their own private jet.
Yeah. Private jet.
Hey, listen. Let me just say one thing. I'm sure he's a fine individual, and he's a great film producer. But I do not believe for a second when the redesign of the Harriet Tubman $20 bill was, you know, during the Obama administration. Of course it was. Just look at them. When it was proposed, you know, it would be up then to this administration to pull it off. Who in their right mind, even Ben Carson was like, they're never going to do this. You know, they were never going to do it.
No, I guess that's true. It just...
Now, maybe Tiger Woods, I would consider that. Because he's like kind of like a black guy. All right, checking in at...
Number four.
President Trump responding to accusations from Nancy Pelosi that he was engaged in a cover-up. Trump and the Democrats were set to sit down the White House this morning talking about the possibility of making a bipartisan infrastructure bill. But after Pelosi made the cover-up comment, Trump reportedly left the meeting. He also criticized the media during a press conference. What? I've never heard him do that.
So here's the bottom line. There was no collusion. There was no obstruction. We've been doing this since I've been president. And actually, the crime was committed on the other side. We'll see how that all turns out. I hope it turns out well. But to my way of thinking, and I know a lot of you agree with me, the crime was committed on the other side. This whole thing was a takedown attempt at the president of the United States. And honestly, you ought to be ashamed of yourselves for the way you report it so dishonestly.
That's unbelievable.
Can't help himself.
It's unbelievable. The canon of reporting of this with sources, and 98% of it got proved out in court, is, I mean, but he gets to say that because it doesn't matter. Because, you know, people who want to believe him, believe him. People don't. That doesn't matter. People don't care anymore. They don't care. The facts do not matter.
There was no collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign. That's it. But they want to make this a big deal. Whether or not they carry the big I word out, I can't imagine that, but they probably would because they do whatever they have to do. I'll tell you, there's a danger here. If someday a Democrat becomes president and you have a Republican House, they can impeach him for any reason, or her. Any reason. We can't allow that to happen.
Or even a black guy. I know. Here's the problem. I think that that's kind of funny in its irony, because if a Democrat becomes president of the United States and he refuses Congress's subpoenas and tells his own people not to testify, wouldn't that be pretty bad? Wouldn't that be if he stood in direct, he violated the Constitution of the United States and stood in direct opposition to the tenets of the separation of powers, wouldn't that be awful,
too? It seems like the kind of thing that wouldn't have gone unnoticed by Trump when he was Citizen Trump criticizing the Obama administration.
Yeah.
In his Twitter.
But you got to remember, look at him.
And I will tell you, my lawyers say, you don't have to do this. You can use presidential privilege. You don't have to let your lawyers and all of your staff testify. You can use presidential privilege, sir. Would you recommend it? Well, you can be transparent or you can be tight. If you've done nothing wrong, being transparent is better. So I said, I did nothing wrong. Let's be transparent.
Okay. Wait. So then McGahn was allowed to go up on Capitol Hill?
Right.
Mueller?
And the taxes are released and all the documents everything. That's
transparency.
Right.
His financial statements, all that. Yeah, go ahead. Take a look at the Deutsche Bank stuff. That's fine. Is that what?
That's
is,
not happening.
Is that happening?
That's not happening.
Okay. I thought maybe I missed something. I don't want to miss this. Kim's got the news of the bomb of the hour. What's coming up?
Chicago police are going high tech when it comes to training officers to deal with those who have mental health issues.
And then there's this. They're Chicago. They're real. Watch Dan Ponce, Lauren Jiggets, Larry Potash, and Robin Baumgarten get real in the morning with the WGN-TV Morning News Team. It's all weekdays, 4 a.m. to 10 a.m. on WGN-TV.
We're doing our best to get through the top 5 at 5. And
how are we doing?
Yeah, well, we got into a fight to start. That was a problem.
That was Kevin's fault.
Yeah.
Number 3.
Arkansas State Network and PBS member stations did not air the season premiere of Arthur on its main channel over concern that it showed a same-sex marriage. The title was Mr. Ratburn and the Special Someone. Arthur's teacher, Mr. Ratburn, marries his partner, Patrick.
Aw, oh, Gav. Aw, oh, what are you doing?
Hello, Patty. I'm afraid I can't talk right now. It was very rude of me to take that call. But it was important.
Are the flowers on the quiz, too?
No, they're for a wedding.
A wedding? Who's getting married?
Me.
Teachers don't get married. Just wrong.
I guess they do have some sort of life outside the classroom.
No, they don't. When they go home, they sharpen pencils, eat kale, and dream up homework assignments.
I don't understand. Arkansas Educational Television Network spokesman Julie Thomas issued a statement that the network made during the decision after previewing the episode, which was, "Now, while daily parents watch our programming with their children and discuss it with them afterwards, reality is that many children, some of them younger than 4, watch when a parent is not in the room. So realizing that many parents may not have been aware of the topics of this particular episode beforehand, we made the decision maybe shouldn't air it because it's, you know, God made Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. You know what I'm saying?
Didn't Alabama do this too?
This is, well...
It is Alabama, isn't it?
No, it's Arkansas.
Oh, it's Arkansas. Alabama did. You're right.
And Alabama.
Because, oh my God.
Both people. Did it.
Alabama just winning this month. Right.
They really are. They really are. You know, ever since they didn't win the national championship, they've really been ticked. So this is an opportunity to get, you know, we're going to get back. Alabama's going to do it again. Oh, man.
Roll Tide.
Because if you close your eyes, it doesn't exist. It's like, what?
Oh, man. Well, just in case, you know, the youngins there, they're going to see, you know, two dudes here trying to, you know, maybe kissing at the altar. And that, I'm going to tell you right now, that's not the way that God intended it.
Is the Simpsons KKK episode okay? That one's all right.
Yes. Checking in at
number 2.
Denise Richards. Remember, she was with Charlie Sheen?
She's a local girl.
Yeah, she is on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. And she said that she's got a lot of great memories of being married to Charlie Sheen. Some not so great memories, but some really wacky things like the time that Charlie brought home a special guest to dinner.
My ex-husband's aged me terribly, I think.
A little bit.
A little bit.
A teeny weeny bit.
Charlie came over for Thanksgiving for dinner a few years ago, and he had a hooker in the car in the driveway. And he's like, you know, was afraid to tell me, well, she's in the driveway. Is it okay if she's in the driveway? I'm like, I said, I'll set a f***ing plate.
You have a thing for bad boys.
Uh-uh. Even a hooker deserves to have Thanksgiving dinner.
Oh, God. What? That is wackier than I thought, and I already thought their relationship was pretty wacky. What? What? He did what?
Denise, I want you to meet my girlfriend, Diamond. Diamond, sit down. We're going to have Thanksgiving. We're going to have tiger blood.
Oh, she's the show after dinner, you know? Post-eating entertainment.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Oh, God. All right. And finally...
Number 1.
So during a congressional hearing last week, Ted Cruz touted the need for the president to launch a 6th branch of the military, the Space Force, which could cost $13 billion just to start.
Pirates threaten the open seas, and the same is possible in space. In this same way, I believe we too must now recognize the necessity of a Space Force.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Space pirates.
That's it. Space Pirates. Jimmy Kimmel, what do you think about that?
Steady as she goes, Space Force.
Captain, we're receiving an urgent message from Grand Admiral Cruz.
Very well. Put him through.
Pirates threaten the open seas. And the same is possible in space.
Grand Admiral Cruz, in all due respect, that sounds a bit ridiculous. What in God's gravy was that?
Ahoy, lunar lovers. We be space pirates. Hand us over your moon doubloons or walk them.
Admiral Cruz warned us about you.
Space Force 2, attack of the space pirates.
See you in space hell, you scurvied mother...
I like moon doubloons.
I just like the idea of Ted Cruz sort of having an imagination.
I did see it recently on my favorite website, this video about space pirates, and they just arrived here, and then they took Amanda and Bree out. And it turns out that Amanda and Bree are actually stepsisters.
Oh, gee. Oh, gosh.
Who went on a date with these space pirates. It was so scary.
Imagine if the aliens met Ted Cruz and he was representative of the human species.
They'd destroy the Earth. Thank you. Goodbye.
The top five at five.
Rokan Show with Anna DeFuentes right here on 720 WGN. I don't want anybody to get all bent out of shape here.
What makes you think we'd do that?
Because we already did once on this topic today. We're going to try to be a little bit more reasonable with each other on the list of Chicago Bears. They do have us talking about this. This is a brilliant promotional campaign to get us to talk about the team. They've been releasing the top 100 Bears of all times. They started on Monday. Tomorrow, on Thursday, it'll be the top 25. They'll be going in 25-person increments, right? So 76 to 100, and then 51 to 75, and now we just got to 26 to 50, whatever it was. And there are some surprises on the list. And this is where the fight began. I'm sort of surprised Rex Grossman didn't make the list because he was a quarterback that went to the Super Bowl.
Unlike Jay Cutler.
Right. Unlike Jay Cutler.
Doesn't belong on the list.
Right. Who's on the list? Although he holds all the records. The about Jay Cutler is he holds all these offensive production records.
Here we go.
And yet he's got to get on the list at some point. But they put him like in the first, what was he?
He's 85.
He's 85. That's, that's 15 from non-existent.
Did Devin Hester make the list?
He'll probably be in the top 25.
I would think so. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yes.
He's the best kick returner in the history of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Potential Hall of Famer.
Right. He was not a great wide receiver. I'm not going to lie to you.
No. Yeah, sure. I didn't care for that move.
No. That was it. They had this. Well, let's not even get started on that. Now, apparently nobody here is, team Rex Grossman with me.
Oh, Anna is, I think, sounds like she is.
I thought he would make the top 100 just because of the Super Bowl appearance. I know a lot of people say he really didn't have that much to do, but he still was the leader of the offense that year, and that was that stands for something. Two Super Bowl appearances in how many years?
One Super Bowl appearance.
Well, two Super Bowl appearances.
Oh, right.
Yeah. One Super Bowl win, two appearances in 53 years of the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I just didn't know anybody would be campaigning for Rex Grossman.
Jay Cutler's there. That's what gets everybody
Cutler
mad.
Should be on the list. He has every offensive quarterback record for the Bears, pretty much.
But a terrible attitude. See? Thank you, Lauren.
So here are the, in terms of the 50 to 25, Mark Bortz, I think he should be on, is 50, top 50, right? Dave Duerson, Doug Buffone, Otis Wilson, Johnny Morris, Wilbur Marshall, Richie Pettibone. People don't really remember him of a certain age, but back in the 60s, Richie Pettibone was a big deal. Neil Anderson, Ken Cavanaugh, Harlan Hill. Don't know who that is. Link Lyman. See, there's always going to be guys. Ooh. You're going to hear names.
and you're going to go, what was that? And there are names from eras that you're like, you don't get anymore.
No.
A guy named Link Lyman.
It's a great name.
Yeah. George Halas, who was kind of a player. He played actually for the, I think he started for the New York Yankees football team. There was the New York football Yankees, which is why they call them the New York football Giants, because there were actually two teams in New York in the 1920s. So Red Grange. Yeah, now that's the name you hear. We don't know who or what he did, but nope. We know he's Red Grange. George Musso, Matt Forte, George Trafton, Patty Driscoll. There's another one. Patty Driscoll. Who came right from Notre Dame.
You know that's true.
Charles Tillman, number 31. I mean, that's, Peanut is Peanut. What was his number? Was he 31?
33,
yeah. They should have made him 33. Would have been better. Fensick, Rick Caceres, Lance Briggs, Owen Crutzen, and Ed Healy. Now, so that leaves, there's so many people already that we've already discussed here. It begs some interesting follow-ups for tomorrow.
You've got Peyton still, you've got Ditka, you've got Urlacher, you got Hamp, you got Richard Dent, McMichael.
Peyton definitely number one. Peyton considered maybe the greatest all-around football player of all times.
Yeah. Totally.
Buckus will be two.
Yeah.
Sarah's probably three. What do you think? He'll be top 10 for sure.
You know, it's going to be interesting. Yeah, Sarah's definitely going to be top 10. Sarah's maybe four or five. You got Urlacher.
Yeah, I think he'll make the top 10.
You have, quarterbacks. I'm just trying to think, who else?
Sid Luckman, as you mentioned.
Yeah, Sid Luckman has to make the team.
If you guys have it your way, Rex will be in the top five.
He doesn't belong there. No. I think he missed his chance.
Curtis Enos, does he make the top 25?
Well, another great name. With the Rex thinking, I think so. Rashawn Salaam.
Yep. There we go.
Great name.
Yes. Rashawn Salaam. I'm surprised he didn't make this cut.
They should do the 100 worst. I'll nominate the first player, Cody Parker, number one.
Poor Kevin was in mourning for a week after that.
Well, has Kevin Butler made the team yet?
Yeah, he and Robbie Gould are 10 apart or something. Yeah. Pretty close.
I think Robbie was 62 and Butler was 72 or 73 or something like that.
I don't know why the kickers don't go higher. I just never understand that. I don't think there's not a respect for kickers.
Nah, they're kickers.
I think we have a lot of respect for kickers now.
Oh, my God. You, of all people, to say that after what we have just been through.
Yeah, but they have one job.
Yeah, but...
You could actually make a case Matt Forte could be higher in this list.
Yeah.
He has a
second
bunch of
all-time leading rusher.
Behind Walter Payton.
Right. I mean, he's pretty much got every running back record behind Payton.
Is Roland Harper on this list yet?
He is not.
That's interesting.
We got one vote on the text line, 847 for Sexy Rexy.
How about...
No, they're saying Kyle Orton is better than Sexy Rexy.
Oh, that was okay. Okay, I see. Good Kyle Orton, better than. Okay, got it.
Boiler up, Lauren.
The neck beard, right. The man of the neck beard. And you're like, I don't think that's the way that's supposed to go, sir.
And the infamous photo of him on top of a bar in some Chicago chugging a bottle of Jack Daniels. Half of it spilled on his shirt.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a game night. I don't know.
You're going to start judging on that? Is that what you're going to start doing?
Me or who?
You.
No, I'm not judging at all.
All right. So then, the worst, I think, by far, the worst Chicago Bear of all times.
Yeah.
Cody Parkey.
Cade McNown.
Mike Glennon's up there, too.
Oh, yeah.
Chris Conte. Gosh.
Mike Glennon, who's more like Hodor. If for those of you the fans of Game of Thrones, the late, great Game of Thrones. All right.
That was a disappointment.
All right. Well, we'll see tomorrow, and it'll be revealed to all of us.
Rex.
Congratulations to OB, right? Ed Obradovich made it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
On the list, so that was very good. I don't know. I think there's going to be some surprises in here.
You do? And you're not going to like them? Are you feeling that way? Or?
I think I might like one of them.
Hmm.
But we'll see. I'm telling
you. You're just putting that out there? You're not going to say who?
I'm just telling you. I think the Rex Grossman's going to make the top 25.
Make an appearance.
I think he is. And people are going to be like, what? Oh, come on.
What were the what qualities were they looking at? Obviously, athletic performance, but did anything like leadership play in? I mean, did they look at
really
everything?
Detailed.
They Don must Pearson have. If Halas made the list, they must have looked at
right whole like yeah total, mm-hmm. not just on the field statistics.
Right, had to all come into play.
Yeah, I mean, it can't just come down to numbers.
No,
obviously, much of it will come down to numbers.
There's things I know. There's somebody here we're missing though.
In terms of who should make the top 25?
Yeah, or, I think okay. there's got to be another quarterback. Doesn't there have to be another quarterback?
Well, Sid Luckman.
Other than Sid Luckman.
Bob Avellini? 630 says worst quarterback ever.
Bobby Douglas didn't make it either, did he?
No.
Bobby Douglas was the quarterback for a long time. They said, you know, he had amazing arm. And it was true. He could throw the ball a mile and a half. But that's what he did on most plays.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So Ditka can or cannot make the list?
Oh, he'll be on.
Sure. Yeah. He was a tight end.
Tight end.
Oh, right. Of course. Okay.
All right.
Hilgenberg.
I like how this is like we're sitting around like at college looking at our homework.
I just don't want to be surprised tomorrow.
All right. Well, I guess we just have to wait for tomorrow. That's okay. What we're going to have to all do. Right. In the meantime, Kim, who's been noticeably absent from this conversation.
I'm out of this conversation.
Packer fan.
What's coming up the news at the top of the hour?
Mayor Lightfoot has a message for the critics who don't like her choice for the head of her security detail.
Coming up, Stories That Matter, Kim Gordon for the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Then Jim Cornelison is going to play News or Ruse with you.
Yay.
That's so much fun.
Yes.
I'm so proud of Jim Cornelison. I mean, it's, you know, I feel like we're part of the Blackhawks, grander Blackhawks family here.
Sure.
And to me, he is and will always be a member of that organization. He's got the rings to prove it. But now he's gone on to be, the featured attraction in the pre-race festivities mm-hmm. at the Indy 500.
Will he sing his answers for News or Ruse today?
We'll ask him to do that, and we'll see. We'll ask about one answer before we decide that wasn't a good idea. We'll try it anyway.
All
right.
Good to have Jim.
And that will be coming your way right here on 720 WGN in 2 minutes.
And now, the Rokan Show presents News or Ruse, a true game of true wit and skill. And now, here's your master of ceremonies, Rokan.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Duffy. That was awfully nice of you. Stepping into the studio right now, our celebrity, he really is one, Jim Cornelison.
Yes.
He is, you know him, you love him for the Chicago Blackhawks
we
game.
We do.
Sings the national anthem 42 times a year, not even including the preseason. My God, I didn't even think about that. at Blackhawks games. And then, of course, you see him at Bears games and sporting events throughout Chicago. And this weekend, mm-hmm. on Sunday, Memorial Day Sunday, he is going to be in Indianapolis for the 5 millionth running of the Indianapolis 500. I was there last year and I watched you do this. I was so excited. I want to make sure I got into the stadium they say it's like a million people that are around in and around Indianapolis for that. And between the traffic and the workers and the whole thing, getting into the Indianapolis Motor Speedway is a big deal.
It's a huge deal. They pick us up at 7:30. We have a police escort from the JW Marriott. And you're part of this caravan going into the what in the heck was that?
That we just made a plug, the JW Marriott.
Hold on 1 second. If you want to play News or Ruse, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Okay, go ahead.
All right, so you're going into the track, even 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning, mm-hmm. it's just bumper to bumper.
Right.
People, you know, take coolers in, right? People are walking, pulling their coolers, and it's
and there's
pretty
so much room there. I mean, because the track... You know, first of all, you know, it's a mile and a half, right? Around the
two and a half miles
around the track. There's a golf course inside the track, at least five holes of a golf course inside
That's
the track,
wild.
Which is really cool. You've got stands it's a tri-oval, so you've got obviously the main straightaway stands on both sides of the main straightaway. And then out on the left and out on the right, you've got these stands. It's, and people are walking around and you're allowed to go on the infield to some degree.
Yes.
There. Mm-hmm. And it is, did this strike you? Because the first time you saw it, this is going to sound stupid, but how fast they're going. I mean, it's you. Your eye can't, when they go past you, if you're stationary, you don't see them.
No, that's 100% right. One of my favorite things to do is walk to the end of the pits and watch them come out of turn four. As they come towards you, you track them, and then you can, if you time everything right, you know, you can track them as they go by. But if you hold your head straight in front of you as they go by, it's a blur of colors.
That's it.
I've even had this weird experience where it's like real quick still shots, like the car is jumping through space, like like that, because somehow, like, your eyes and your brain are not tracking a 230 miles an hour.
Right. And it's right in front of you.
How do people videotape it? Like, because we wouldn't be able to, can you capture it?
Oh, you can capture it, like, from a distance, and if you're moving, you know, you can track it. And the further something is away, the easier it is to track.
Last year was Danica's last... And I'm forgiving her just temporarily. That she's
I'm not sure we forgive her, but she's a Packer fan now. Let's not forget that.
I know. I don't want to talk about it.
Okay,
but anyway,
let's leave that out of it.
The point is that it was her last race, and I've been obviously a huge fan, Roscoe, Illinois' very own. And I had to get a shot of her car because she's in the green GoDaddy car, right? So it was like this lime green, almost fluorescent green car. Hard to miss on the track, right? But... And in the 50 times she went past me before on the track, I'm like, I can't, you know she's coming because I saw her coming out of turn four, and I'm like, all right, here we go. I got it. Oh God, I missed it.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do. So what I did is I rolled video.
Oh.
And as she went by, and then I went frame by frame to find the clearest shot.
Ah.
And all it is just a smushy green line. But it is so cool because
that's a smushy green line.
And you think about the, you know, people who like to make fun of car racing. Oh, you just turn and left the whole time. Those athletes, their eye-hand coordination.
Oh, gosh.
They're risking death at every moment. And they're pulling anywhere from 1.5 to 3 G's at all times in the car for, you know, a couple of hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's impossible.
Yeah, they all work out. They're all really fit. I mean, just meeting them, they don't look like me at all.
Any of us.
In fact, I went to the IMS Museum last weekend, and they have a car there you can try to sit inside, right? I'm 6'5", 290. And so trying to sit in that car, was such a joke. There was no way, you know, those guys, they tend to be small, lean.
Yes, they are. They're in great shape. They also their pain threshold, their ability to work in heat environments and stuff like that. It's just crazy stuff. So congratulations on this. And it's amazing that I've been watching that thing. It's moved to NBC this year for the first time.
Right.
It was on ABC forever and ever and ever. And now that it's on NBC, the great tradition when I was a kid was, you know, get up and you watch the national anthem and you just watch the opening ceremony and then, and then you have to wait, you know, then they tell you who wins at the end because you can't keep up.
Didn't you leave early last year?
Left a little early. Yeah. I listened to the rest of it on the way out. I wanted to. There's a million people.
I know you wanted to beat the crowds.
So it takes a while to get out if you.
It does if you don't go. So the point is that the Jim Nabors part, you know, as a kid, because you know Jim Nabors, from Andy Griffith and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So you just watch him get older and sing this song about Indiana that you're like, and as an Illinois, and you're looking at the Indiana, and go, come on, Indiana's got its own song. And now it's our buddy Jim Gornelison is doing it.
That is so cool.
Really,
it is an honor.
Oh.
And I got to tell you, the first time I did it, I was pretty nervous because I'd never sung the song before. And
nobody
like you said. Well, Jim Nabors did it 32 years, and people love Jim Nabors. I mean, what's not to like about Jim Nabors? I mean, Gomer Pyle and Mayberry and whatever.
You started a new tradition, Jim.
Right. Yeah.
All right, we got to get to news or ruse, otherwise we're gonna, because we got White Sox baseball coming your way here in just a second.
Oh yeah.
All right, here we go. Here's what we're playing for. $75 gift certificate to Green Tea Home Services for all your home service needs, including garage door maintenance, air duct purification system, carpet cleaning service. Call 800-5-GREEN-TEA or go to greenteaservices.com. And everybody is going to get a $50 gift certificate to Builder Supply Outlet. True outlet prices every day. Check out The Edge, their state-of-the-art kitchen and bath showroom in Broadview, now also open in Orland Park. Here are our contestants. Debbie is playing with Kim. Rick is playing with Lauren. And Mike is playing with Jim. And we start now. Debbie and Kim, here's your headline. Man admits to taking meth, stealing boat as victim chases with jet ski.
Sounds like something out of a movie. I think it's news. What do you think, Debbie?
I think so, too.
We'll go news.
You're going to go news. All right, there you go.
Nicely done, out of the gate. Rick and Lauren, here's your headline. $10,000 grant to determine if Florida really is the craziest state goes unused after researcher dies from snake bite.
Even if this isn't real, they should do that research. What do you think, Rick?
Say that again.
$10,000 grant to determine if Florida really is the craziest state goes unused after a researcher dies from snake bite.
The only reason I would say ruse is I don't know how you study that or research it.
I'm going to go with you there, Laura.
Ruse?
Ooh, calling it out.
There, yeah.
Sniffing
yeah.
that one out.
Wow.
Very nice.
She's scary. Mike and Jim, here's your headline. Condo development offering buyers free avocado toast for a year.
Ooh.
Like that. Oh, Jim, I'm going to go with that's news.
That's news? All right, I'll go with that.
There you go.
Okay.
All right, very
that's
well
a
done.
Thing. That's really a thing.
All right, back to you, Debbie and Kim.
Debbie Kim, more research on space germs is needed before moon base becomes a reality, scientists warn.
Well, of course that's true.
Especially of course
for
it's
true. I'm thinking news.
News.
Aww. Ro wrote that headline.
Oh, I was
going to
say.
He wants that to
Rick
be true.
Rick and Lauren, here's your headline. Coachella attendees suffer massive herpes outbreak.
Oh, gee. Say that's news. Really something. Mm-hmm. Some kind of outbreak.
Yep.
Rick, what do you think?
I don't know. When's the last herpes outbreak?
Listen, couldn't thank God you. I don't know. But the
Laura, well, you shouldn't know. Well, what do you think?
Hey, just besmirched me, by the way. Where's Mike Monaco? I'm going to sue him for that. All right, so
it's not legal.
Coachella, is that true? Is that news or ruse? Coachella attendees suffer massive herpes outbreak. Is that a real headline?
I'm guessing news. I don't know about you, Rick.
No, I don't hear that.
You're going to go with a guy. I don't know what he said. Yeah, that's right. I just go with her, I think, is the way to do that.
Sure.
All right, Mike and Jim, here's your headline.
Vaccine rates climb on Hippie Island amid measles outbreak.
What kind of island?
A hippie island.
Yeah, Hippie Island.
Hippie Island.
Vaccine rates climb.
Jim, I don't know.
What Man, do I don't know either. If there was a measles outbreak, I'm pretty sure people would then decide to go get a vaccine. But I don't even know where the Hippie Island is. But I'll go with yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna also go with yeah. It's been there's been a lot of measles lately.
So you're gonna say yes, and that is correct. And the Hippie Island
it.
Is
right.
off Puget Sound. In,
oh, is it really?
State. Yeah.
Oh, that's my home state.
All right, here we go. Here's the. That was very good. All right, we go right into the Orion Samuelson round right here.
Okay.
Here we go. Here is your headline, Debbie and Kim.
Teachers are tired of pointless emails.
Aren't all of us? Yes, I think that's news. What do you think, Debbie?
I don't know. I think, yeah, news.
All right, you stay alive. That was close. All right. Rick and Lauren, here is your headline.
Zoo issues warning after sea lion puked up a toddler's sock.
Oh, my gosh.
Man, what do you think, Rick?
I think it's too crazy to be rude.
Yeah, I have no idea. Let's go with news then.
There you go.
You got it.
All right, that eliminates Debbie and Kim. Mike and Jim, you got to get this right to stay in the game. Otherwise,
all right,
Rick and Lauren taking it away. Here you go.
Okay.
83-year-old bought 55,000 designer gowns for wife, so she wouldn't have to wear the same one twice.
Crazy enough just to be news. What do you think?
Yeah, I'll go with news also.
Look at that!
Staying alive.
That's pretty great right there.
Really?
All right. One. This is very fast.
Speed
Lightning
round.
Round right here. Rick and Lauren, back to you. Automaker says it has no idea how Kim Jong Un got hold of its armored limos.
I don't know. I think that one's a ruse.
I actually think that's
news. Okay, we could go with your gut.
All right.
Call it out. Mike and Jim, here's your headline. Rich guys are most likely to have no idea what they're talking about, studies suggest.
Is that true?
I got to say it's not true, but...
I'll go with that, Jim. I'm not rich. I don't know what I'm talking about, so... All right. Let's go with Ruse.
You going to go with Ruse? And unfortunately, that's true.
Oh, my God. Oh, I'm sorry, Mike.
Yep. Researchers embarked on a novel study intent on measuring what Princeton philosophy professor contends is one of the most salient features of our culture, the ability to play the expert without being one. Hello! I made a whole career out of that!
And only rich guys do that?
Well, apparently.
Are you rich?
I am.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
All right, Jim Cornelison, thank you so much for doing this. We'll
Thanks,
see you
Jim.
Sunday.
My pleasure.
Good seeing you.
Turn on NBC. Watch the great Indianapolis 500. It's one of the great spectacles in all of sport, but it is also... If you get a chance to get to it, get to it.
Something to see.
But it's also a great television show as well, and Jim is going to be singing the song that Jim Nabors made most famous.
Yes.
Right here. What's
Can't miss that part.
Right here in Indiana.
Yeah, don't miss that part. Back home again
Back
in
home
Indiana.
Again in Indiana. Don't sing it now. God, don't sing it now.
No, I'm not going to sing it now.
All right. All right. Let's do this. A real quick break, and then White Sox baseball coming your way.
Cool.